Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey there, Beverly Hills 90210 fam.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop?
That's interesting.
What? Yeah.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
I said...
A waitress, rather, call the police. And she was mistaken 90210 for
cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
But look at that. Dean Cain, and Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here?
Oh, at least there's one person on this Fricata set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him, and I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax, because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, here we are. It's been a minute. We are all back live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. It's good to see everybody. It's been a couple of months, I think, since we've been here.
Well, you've been out busy filming. What have you been filming, Pete?
Kathleen and I are working on a documentary about the actor Tim Curry, who Kathleen was in a movie with him called Scary Movie 2. And so we've been out and about, and here we are in New York working together, right? This has been a dream come true, filming.
How long did it take?
This week when I got to interview Carol Burnett as part of the documentary as well.
That's right. Yep. Carol Burnett and Susan Sarandon and a whole bunch of other people. This is all because Larry said we should have Kathleen Robertson on the show.
I said, no, we have to get Kathleen. We have to find a way.
There's a little urgency there. Absolutely.
Then you got your little cousin who's about 6 years old to kind of do a pity plea.
Yes. Yes. And that was the secret. That was the secret sauce. Yeah. As it turns out. Chuck, how have you been?
Been a lot going on. We were in New York. We had to cancel our trip to Martha's Vineyard to be with Larry and Dee, because we had to be here in Los Angeles helping Lindsay and Josh's deal with the fact that they had a baby in queue up there, or NICU, I guess they call it, and little baby Ruby who was born and up in Berkeley, so we were just up there. And I spend a lot of time putting together the Rosen Report, more than I ever anticipated. But also listening to baseball and doing other stuff. So we took the dogs with us on that 10-day stint to Northern California. So that was a trip.
Nice.
You should have told me you were in Berkeley, Chuck. I could have visited you, only 30 minutes away.
What town?
Berkeley. You said you were in Berkeley. You should have told
Berkeley.
Me.
Berkeley. Yeah, we stayed in... Oakland, actually. We were in Rock Ridge.
Same thing.
Where were you? Which one?
I live close by, near Concord, a little small town called Pittsburgh. So I live close
by. I know Pittsburgh. Yeah. When I lived, not this month, next month, I'm going to, I was an intern in Washington, D.C. in Congress when the Senate Watergate trials were going on.
Oh, boy.
And my roommate was from Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, nice.
Dave something.
Larry, you're in the vineyard, which we haven't seen this a familiar background in a while. It was nice to see. How is it?
This is my office, which was once a mudroom. Mm. It's a lovely office. I like it. My office in Montgomery, Ohio, is really good. I got all my posters up now. It looks fantastic. Next time I'll be there probably in a couple of weeks.
Oh, okay, so that's happening.
I've been in the vineyard since late April. It's been a good run.
Is this our first vineyard show? What were this you there? No, you had to be there for the anniversary.
I don't think so. I think we had a show before.
Maybe.
We did. We had a show before. And we had something for someone's book, I think. I think we had
Bethany Rooney.
Yeah, Bethany Rooney.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah. Did you have to do the whole car thing this time around? We didn't.
Oh, I've got my cars. I think I've got to have to rework my fleet next season. But I had so many other things go wrong. So that's just nothing.
Take the battery out, the battery back in. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's all. The cars are running fine, as well as they could, considering one's a 1998 and one's a 2001. Mm. You know, they're old cars. Island cars, we call them, because not everything works.
Right.
But, yeah, everything. No, I've had a lot of little things I had to take care of, a lot of chores. And but I've been writing the third book of the Pool Guys Kid thing. I'm, about halfway through it right now. So I'm enjoying that. And excited that people are going to start reading Rushing Cabo. I haven't really heard too many people read it. I know Chuck has read it, which is great. And it's pretty cool. It's action packed, and there's romance, and it's got everything you want.
It's great. And so, how can people get this now, Larry?
You just go to LarryBullen.com, and then there's links to Amazon, and you from there you can there's Barnes and Noble or Indie, whatever shopping platform you want. It's not in bookstores as such, but all the online platforms. But if you just go to LarryBullen.com, you just click on it, it'll go right to Amazon, I think.
That's amazing. And in a little bit, you're going to read some chapters. I think you're going to read some sections.
I'm going to read a chapter and then a little small part, which because as Chuck knows, as writers, we always use all our personal experiences too. So it's always fun to kind of leak them into everything we do.
Yes, I love that.
If you want, I'll read a couple of paragraphs of my review of Crushing Cabo.
Oh, I would love. I mean, now we're talking.
We're getting early peek, an early edition.
Yeah, I'll go somewhere where no one else will go.
Brian Navarro, it's good to see you. How have you been?
I've been good. Nice dealing with the heat, but things have been great.
Well, that's really good. Now, Brian brought up to my attention.
Wait, I got to ask a question, Pete. You talk about the heat. We had to drive down I-5 in the heat of the day last Friday, and there's a place, the Harris Ranch. And we stopped at the Harris Ranch because we needed to spark our car. That wouldn't even get us all the way to Venice, but at least would get us closer to the Grapevine. We could do it one more time for a quickie and get home. Mm. And it was 125, according to our thermometer in our car. Is it like that where you are when you talk about the heat?
Me?
No, Brian.
Brian.
Oh. That Friday, for us, it was 112, I think.
That's hot, man. That's
It is hot. It does get hot up here in Woodland Hills, too, Chuck. You did. You did.
112 worth?
Not that quite hot, but it's you did predict that would happen, and it's.
Yeah,
it's
97. Happened. 97, 98. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Brian brought something up to my attention, which I think is amazing, that, and I don't know if you know about this, Chuck, but that 90210 got some sort of HD enhancement internationally. Are you aware of that?
What was that?
Well, it's interesting. I'm coming to this podcast with just, the most important takes a lot of effort. And because of that, other things kind of I'm not on top of in the same way. And it was the ball was in CBS's court, what they were going to do. And then we were going to, support that or be there for that or help however we could. And they said, OK, well, stand by. We'll be in touch. And then they have pretty much ghosted us. So don't quite know what's going on.
Look at these shots.
A Greek streaming site has been releasing these HD upscaled transfers of the early seasons. They started with season one. I think they're up to season two right now. It's this Greek streaming site, and they've been uploading these HD transfers. And now there's rumors that Paramount's going to do the same thing for us in the States.
Well, I don't see why they haven't done this a long time ago.
Yeah,
I know.
You know, just they're such a, and this is, you know, the people I dealt with. Listen, just to understand, they're doing their job. They were really nice people. You could tell that on all of the correspondences I had, all the Zooms I had with them. I got nothing against any of them personally, but really the company. I mean, this is Paramount, CBS. These are people who, and you know, I don't want to get overtly political here, but you know. You instead of backing your venerated TV show, 60 Minutes, you pay the Trump, give $25 million to go away so that you can complete your merger. And your merger is really based on eviscerating your what was your company. So it's hard to... get real excited about what they have in store for 90210 because it hasn't been all that wonderful in the past. And I haven't made the kind of progress over the 5 years we've been doing this show as I had hoped. And even long before I was doing this show, you know, I was looking back at some of my correspondence with the Blaze. And, you know, these were the issues then, you know, it doesn't really change. But the image, I thought, looked pretty good in
Hollywood. Oh, I think so, too. I mean, like this one, even this is the pilot. I mean, look. Yeah.
Yeah, the pilot was a washed out mess. Those are beautiful.
They made them look really, really beautiful. Yeah. So
there was some AI upscaling because I saw a clip. Somebody on Reddit keeps posting clips of them. There was one of the Palm Springs episode. And the backdrop for the, you know, the Palm Springs Resort is just a complete, like, AI reconstruction. It's nothing like what the actual establishing shot was. So there's some AI stuff going on in there as well.
Oh, are you saying there's AI going on in these pictures?
These remasters.
Wait, to upgrade the imagery?
Yes, because I know for sure, I pointed it out when they posted this on Reddit. They posted the clip where, Brenda tells, you know, Janie, is this your purse? And then kicks her out of the room. You know, the establishing shot is supposed to be, you know, this Palm Springs hotel. And the establishing shot for this HD release, it's like this weird, it looks like a golf course, like this really weird AI-generated background. Establishing shot. Yeah.
Here we go. Another new issue. So now it's not just the music, but now we're changing out
location. God, yeah, the music, it's another thing. You know, a lot of people are excited with these.
Oh, these poor people. You know, the paces that they put this through. These people, these producers I know, these are the guys who are trying to get the Mayor of Venice done. Right? And we have an actor signed up, and I'll tell you about it when the appropriate time. We have a director, all these different things. But they had a movie release, and the movie release was called Clica, and had a lot to do with Mexican-American music. And it was actually financed through Mexico and by the guy who's the mogul of all of that stuff. And I don't know if it's called Tejano. I don't know what the music is, Larry, but it's the stuff that gets on the radio and generates an industry. And this was a good movie. Everybody said so. Sony picks it up as an indie. These guys are the producers. And now there's even fear of releasing it in August because of the fear that nobody's going to show up because ICE is going to target it.
Oh boy.
And that is not out of the question. This is a movie that was made for the southeastern quadrant of LA County, and that's where they've been they've been scuffling. So I feel really badly for these guys. But the other thing that Sony has made them put their paces through is doing drive-bys, if you know, like not the focus of the scene or the shot, but you know, that if you're in the car and there's a mirror out the window, whatever, and they didn't get the rights to all the stuff because they didn't focus on any of it, did not matter to Sony, they had to go back to all of it and get it. And you know, that's just really a hassle, that's a thankless job.
Yeah.
You know, tough to make a movie these days.
In so many different ways. Chuck, let's talk about the Rosen Report.
Ah.
The songs, the music, which is something that we want to talk about a little bit here too. In the last,
it was interesting. We were in the month of June, and what we've been doing with the Rosen Report and relative to 90210 is that we I didn't do it on the first one because I didn't really think of it. And Lisa didn't say to me yet, are you doing special content for 90210? And I went, oh, I better do that. And so you and I, Pete, had talked about doing, what were my favorite episodes and clips from them and things along those lines. And so we started doing it. And you get like three, in May, as you can imagine, Larry, the May sweeps one had like five or six, there were more going on. And November is going to be a big month because that, and we finally put it together. But June, nobody releases a new episode in June. We've got some for July and August because of the summer episodes.
Yeah.
But June is a zero. So I used it to talk about music. And and it coincided, it's the summer episode. And so, for the month of July. So that was for June. In July, the one that's coming up, it's all about summer, and summer's the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
And the Rolling Stones also, intersects with us here in 90210. And
I I say this you asked for some Stone stories, but the very reason why this podcast exists is because of the Rolling Stones in a weird, weird way. Because the episode that Chuck and I talked about before we were even doing a podcast was the Rolling Stones. We did an interview back in 2019, and I'm going to play a clip. And I actually today posted it on our channel. So the original 2019 interview with me and Chuck is up there talking about.
Because you tried to get me to do a podcast. I wasn't interested. You came back. I wasn't interested. You came back. You said, well, how about we just talk about the Rolling Stones? And I said, that I can do.
Yes. All right. Here's a clip of it. So I'm so excited to have Charles Rosen here on the Pop-Up Podcast. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm a 90210 super fan and a Rolling Stones super fan. So it was almost like you guys made this episode specifically for me. Right off the bat, just to confirm, that's not true. You didn't make this. You weren't like, there's this kid in Jersey we're making this episode for, right?
I have to be truthful. Of the 144 episodes that I produced, this is the one I made for me.
There you go. That's awesome. So you can listen to the full throttle interview of us talking about it. But it's interesting. So when I found it, Chuck, I went back and listened to it. And the detail and story of you being in the office at the right time when you found out that Fox was going to be working with the Stones in some promotional way is really how that happens, right?
Timing is everything, and there I was. And Rosen Report, I skim over that because I'm talking about all the concerts and didn't do just a deep dive into the Voodoo Lounge tour. What always got me about that one, Larry O'Brien, is there we are. We're in the first row. Before the first row. We're right in front of the stage. We're in the pit, as it were, in other places. But we're the only ones there, our crew. And nobody's in front of us. You could just see Mick and the group there. We finish our shot, and the entire crew, Paul, Jason, Gabrielle, everybody just leaves, leaving me and Christine Elise as the two only two people to be very aware of where we were in proximity to the show here. And there's a number, and then Jason comes and grabs Christine and says, we're leaving now. And it's just me. And being there and having that proximity, I really came to the point that, well, I'm never going to top this. So why do I never go to another show? And I didn't until this 2024 when I saw him at SoFi. So,
That's very interesting because I'm sure back in 94, the Stones were an old band.
Well, again, Jason didn't like it. That's the classic thing. Jason, when we told Jason what we were doing, He went, "Oh, you boomers. Oh, you and your old fucking."
Well, we went in 1989. I do write about this too. This will be in a different part about the Stones and the concert, not having to do with 90210. Although I went there with Brad Gross, who did direct episodes in 90210, was our first AD for the first few seasons. And Bradley and I went, and that was because it was the battle of the bands. It was going to be the changeover from the Rolling Stones, who hadn't toured in 7 years, and Guns N' Roses, who was on fire. And what the Stones did is that they would never let their opening acts, whether it was Guns N' Roses, whether in the Voodoo Lounge it was the the guys from Venice, sometimes I feel like I'm
Red Hot Chili Peppers,
Peppers, and then once I saw that an opening act for them was Prince, and the thing about all three is that the Stones would not let them plug into their amps, so that when the Stones,
they would not let any band go on the lip that became the tongue, and stuck out on the stage where Mick would do his thing, and the only band to ever do that, and then was kicked immediately off the tour, was Leonard Skinner.
Of course.
You guys.
I actually think Prince got booed at the Stones shows. I remember reading
I think about it, yes, he was not a good choice for their shows.
And they threw beer bottles at him in Philadelphia.
Well, like, you know, I also talk about the first Stones show, they booed the Buffalo Springfield. So, you know, that was, you know, nowadays Clancy can't even sing, can't compare to Mother's 19th Nervous Breakdown, you know, I mean.
But Stones fans can't just accept that there's an opening act. They have to boo them and then throw beer bottles at them just to make the point clear. We don't want you to hear your performance. So that's how that goes.
Okay. Sweetheart.
But so anyway, in this episode that we did, the first episode of our podcast, you demanded, Chuck, I don't know if you remember this, but that the first episode would be the music. You wanted us to cover a celebration of the music of Beverly Hills 90210. And we did that, and it was amazing, and I think we should probably do more of those. But we each picked, at the time, significant songs that we all thought were from 90210, and I have those clips of us picking those songs that we thought really good. Obviously, Lily at the time picked Losing My Religion, so that's not one that you selected at that time. But here's what Larry referenced.
We had, of course, The Flaming Lips, which was, you know, it was the classic, you know, they're a classic alternative band, and they had just played the first, I think, Lollapalooza, and you know, I was gonna basically tell a story, because we were looking for the episode Love Hurts, where Donna, there's going to be an attempt to rape her. It's going to be an edgy episode. And we kind of thought it would be kind of fun to have an unusual band. And I remember when we were trying to get people, you know, Ken Miller was, who Chuck mentioned, was very important in all the music. He was the basically go-between, and he had his own taste and was a writer himself. So we reached out to the bands, and I was reading, you know, like, Flaming Lips, to their side of it, they couldn't believe that we would call them or we would want them there. They thought it was a big joke. They thought it was a prank. They never thought it was ever going to happen. And our actors, I remember, didn't, you know, they weren't really jumping to it. It was really, you know, the song that their big hit was called, I Know a Girl Who Thinks of Ghosts. She makes you breakfast. She makes you toast. She don't use butter. She don't use cheese. She don't use jelly. Or any of these, she uses Vaseline. The classic line, which gets repeated in all the music magazines, is Steve Sanders saying, "I'm no fan of alternative music, but these guys rock the house."
Yeah.
Did you write that line, Larry?
You're looking. Yeah, I did. You know, before we go, you know, we took Jason's attitude about the Stones, and I gave it to Kathleen, to Claire's character, because we have that online flaming with it. They make fun of the Stones online on Delphi. The Fox also owned an internet, whatever it was called then, an ISP or something.
So is that where you gave, because I asked Chuck that in that first interview, is that where you gave Claire and David the I Can't Stand the Stones?
Yes, exactly.
You wrote the first.
You know, that was a really valid position Jason took. And since I wrote the script, I really took that with me and made sure we had that voiced.
For sure. That was smart.
It was kind of fun because I knew they were going to get won over by it because the Stones fucking rock.
Yeah. I always wondered about that part of it. Like, I remember I asked you, Chuck, in that interview, did the Stones have script approval over what the content was going to be?
They didn't care at all. They cared about their moments on film and how how our production would, what we would do to mitigate interfering with the experience of the audience. They always kept talking, and I don't put this in the Rosen Report because there's no real reason to. But we'll talk about it now. is that they kept talking. Fran Curtis, who was representing them, kept talking about that they're going on their international tour and they want to coincide that with this episode. And I'd say, of course. And that was that, and that was that. And we finish we produced it. Now it's, you know, the Monday and Tuesday of the following week. And she calls me and she asks, when is it going to be, this episode going to be broadcasting around the world? And I have to break it to her that it depends on the country and that we've been on now. This is our fifth season. And some of the countries are just joining for the first time now. So you didn't do your homework. You never asked, and I never volunteered. So that was that. So that was mention the Rosen Report. It's our little secret here.
Larry, I think you wrote, Claire Arnold's the first troll, internet troll on TV.
I like
credit
for that.
Yeah,
you bust her about that.
Yeah, Claire was a trailblazer. She was the first internet troll. She did the first little, she was a predecessor to the YouTubers when she was filming Ray and everybody doing her little projects on the screen. Yeah.
She knew what was up. I mean, they wrote that for her, but still, I like to feel that it was partly her.
Our advanced character,
Okay, but Larry, you picking out the song from the Flaming Lips back in that clip, is that now we've done this podcast 300,000 episodes later, would you still say that's the one that you think of the most?
Well, no.
Okay, so there you have it. Already,
Chuck wasn't there, but the most dramatic moment I remember was the death of Tony, Dylan, and that song, "Nobody Knows Me Like My Baby," which is a heartbreaker, and it's a tear.
Lyle loves that song.
Another real life voice of the series.
Lyle Love It.
Lyle Love It. Nobody Knows Me Like My Baby. It's really a beautiful song.
It is a very beautiful song.
And Luke Perry just acts his ass off in that, discovering the body, and it's just amazing.
It's very hard to watch.
I'd probably go with that one if I had to pick one.
Well, I'm not going to watch it then.
Here's what you shouted at Chuck. You had a lot of different ones at this time, but this is one that you mentioned.
I think we should go to the Pete's Pit song. And the episode is called Fame Is Where You Find It. And this is the one, this was pitched and put in as Brandon Goes Hollywood. But one thing that I've noticed about 90210 episodes, when I see them again, is, you look to see, well, this was our intention. It was Jason's episode. Nobody remembers Jason's part in it.
No.
This is Brenda's episode. This is about Brenda, Laverne.
Brenda shut it out.
And we told her about the character. She said, oh, that sounds fun. And they filmed this episode. And what Christine was talking about with Shannon's talent is that it burst. And this was as a young woman. And the one thing that you see so much in her performance when you look at the video of it is just how much fun she was having.
Yeah.
And what better song to put out there about teenage angst than that of another part, another generation by Leslie Gore. It's my party, and I will cry when I want to.
Do you remember saying that? No.
Well, it's interesting because not specifically, and it's a really good one, but I know that here that as I put the songs down in volume 7 of the Peach Pit songs, I used a completely different song.
So 300,000 episodes later of this podcast, you're selecting a different song.
I'm collecting here. These are called the songs from the Peach Pit. And only one of them is from season 1. And it's from Famous Where You Find It. It's not obvious. It's just the one that it's the song I always wanted. And I always thought would be perfect background because it's a cool song, but it doesn't draw attention to itself. So I'm going to hit it and see if you guys can even hear it. Okay, Pete, is that all right?
Sure, you can try that. You could hum it.
Can you hear it?
No.
hum us a few bars.
Where'd you go? Where are you guys?
We're still here.
We're here.
Where am I? Steam Yard there. Sally, go round the roses. Sally, okay. Go round the roses.
Sally, go round the roses.
You know that song, Larry?
Yeah, I do remember it. I can't remember who did it, though.
The Janettes.
Okay.
I didn't know either, but there they are. So that
I think
was.
We also did Summertime.
Yeah, I didn't put that one in. The other ones, let me see, what are the ones here from the. Barbara Lewis singing Baby I'm Yours from My Desperate Valentine when Brandon's breaking up with Emily. Summertime Blues, I love this. Eddie Cochran, I just love the fucking song. I'd Like to Get to Know You by Spanky and Our Gang. Marvin Gaye going Mercy, Mercy Me. That we do that in the incest storyline. My favorite, I think the best one we ever did was in season 3. And that was, it was the one where with Luke in the middle of the triangle. And we actually used music cues from the Love and Spoonful. Yes. Did You Ever Have to Make Up Your Mind as a comedic transition. And I love that.
That is a very underrated choice because that one is used so well in that episode. And I believe even Nat busts him about continually playing the song at some point, too. He's like, if you play
absolutely.
Yeah.
We took that to the limit. The last three Peach Pit numbers I got here are So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, which was playing when David fires Steve as a manager. And She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. Here's an ode to Larry in Massachusetts. We did the Standells doing Dirty Water. And then when Donna Martin gets her cap and gown, we did Chicago Saturday in the Park, where every day is the 4th of July. So that's the Peach Pit songs of 2025 in my memory.
Here's what I picked. For me, I'm going to pick Harry Nilsson's Remember when Andrea Zuckerman leaves the cast. I picked that because there's a moment where Andrea the character.
You really like Schmaltz. That's why you picked it. Like Schmaltz.
I love him. And there's a moment when the character says, I feel like Dorothy, that she's leaving Oz in a way. And I think that song really captures that moment. Do you guys remember that? Chuck,
I would say Jessica, you know, that was a Jessica Klein episode, one of the a really great writer producer for the show. And I think it was the penultimate episode of season 6.
5, buddy. It was the one before 5? Palm Springs. Yeah. And it was saying goodbye to Andrea.
Andrea left then? Oh.
That was the one she left in, the second to last episode of
Yeah, Blonde. You're right. Okay,
so yeah. That accompanied it. And then the And Jessica's husband at the time and writing partner, Steve Wasserman, was a music guy. He was one who had strong opinions, and this was the song he picked. I love Harry Nilsson. I used to listen to Harry Nilsson in college all the time and regretted I didn't have the piano.
Am I frozen up? Or, okay, I froze up.
But I'll tell you something, but I have to be truthful. Because you said this song And I said to Larry, when did you use it? And Larry comes back and says, I didn't use that song. And I find out that, oh,
I think we should put in perspective. Steve Wasserman, when you wanted schmaltz, you went to Steve.
And I loved all of our tech. I left all of our tech issues in the beginning because this was at the beginning of COVID. It was our first episode, and we didn't know what we were doing with StreamYard. You would just glitch for no reason. People would glitch and just freeze up. I don't stand by this song. This is not this song is not on my. I now 300,000 episodes later look back and say it's not that it was not that big. It's a big moment for 90210, yeah. But I think I would probably go with Chris Isaak's Wicked Game.
Oh, really?
A lot of people would do that, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the, you know, there's so many other songs other than that one that is probably the most significant.
Good scene, though. I mean, I'll say, and I think a lot of fans will agree, I think Andrea got one of the better send-offs.
I think she got the best send-off.
Yeah, the best one.
A lot of guilt going on there, for sure.
What about this thing about Steve Wasserman and his music selections?
Steve would go to post-production, so he had a lot of control on that. And he's just like, again, Steve
He had less control than he wanted between seasons one and five. After that, he was your monster at that point, you know. But, he had really good ones, and he liked certain things, and he talked me out sometimes of things that I think might have been a mistake. So I trusted his viewpoints in a lot of that stuff. But he sometimes would settle for a song. I mean, like one of the things that I put in the Rosen Report with music were five songs we didn't get that I really wanted.
Can I share the one before you share them? The one that I feel that you've said on this podcast and you've told me personally a couple of times is the Don Henley one.
The End of the Innocence, yeah.
That song, if that's in that moment, it changes the whole.
Those who go to the, absolutely. So if those who are listening and who know the Rosen Report, go to volume 7, go to the zip code, go to the section that songs that never made it to the zip code, and there's The End of the Innocence, and it's the third verse, and if you time that up with that, you know, that scene of them driving down the hill and looking at the Hollywood sign, it's the perfect one. Yeah, that I have that there. Of course, Everybody Dance Now, you know, right. was one. But that's me blowing it, just not picking it. But the three that we wanted in front of the two that I still really, it would have been cool to have Bonnie Raitt give us. Let's Give Them Something to Talk About with Brandon and Kelly, but she said no. And Melitha Etheridge was the one that I still really don't understand because in the fire episode when the party's starting, you walk into I'm the Only One, and if you've ever seen that video, that just shows you how closeted 1994 was.
As 94, 95, I think.
Maybe. What came right after that? Yeah. Up in flames.
That's but the one when I was reading the Rosen Report, that was the one that I thought, wow, yeah, that would have been a perfect
yeah, well, that one, that's right. That was there. But the funny one, I wanted at one point Mr. Jones for the Dreams of Dylan McKay, and I realized that the song that we got was a better version of it, was a better use. And the one that we got was, let me just go back again, it was that we licensed. The Police singing Spirits in the Material World. I thought it was a better song. I like that song.
A young person just wrote here on this. Again, must mention the show's original instrumental scores. To me, those are what made the show magical. I don't really remember the songs that have been omitted. I guess I was too young to appreciate.
I think the problem is that you were too young to appreciate.
And also, now it's been so long since the original music is in the episodes that this new version that Ken Miller created is the version that people think are the episodes.
Oh, yeah.
It's very sad and upsetting. But anyone who needs the episodes, I have them, and I'd be happy to share them with you all. So just let me know if you need them. Because I hate the idea that people are listening to some goofy song, like not even in the vein of the scene.
It's just
inappropriately not placed, or someone who just didn't give a shit. Unfortunately,
we just put so much effort went into it, and as I explained in the Rosa Report, for those who are going to go check it out on Volume 7, and of course, if you are interested in catching up and seeing some of the stuff, there's a lot of stuff directed to 90210 fans. Just ask Pete or Brian, and we'll get those off to you. But it's we talked about the idea that we had no money to spend. We had the lowest license fee, so where we could spend some money was on our music. Mm-hmm. And we started doing that well, and we were penalized for it. And there isn't really the justifications. Just are that the television industry didn't care about it at all. It's different than movies and music. Movies and music protect the originality, and television just meant, we're venal, give us a break. Yeah.
Discovered that we were a good show now. Like, no one thought it was a good show. They weren't going to invest.
Yeah, but here you're spending all this money to 4K the episodes, and I don't think
it had to do with good or bad. I think it had nothing to do with
that. Lazy fucking deal makers.
They felt they had gotten. We did our first syndication deal, and it was good. It wasn't great, and they figured they'd gotten everything out of it they were ever going to get.
Right.
They were very wrong.
But the thing is that you just spent all this money to re-digitize the tapes. You pull the tapes out of storage, and you're not going to fix the music too. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you think that people give a shit about the HD quality 4K, or would you rather hear REM in the song in the episode? So again,
that's the sentiment of a lot of the fans right now on Reddit. When the news broke out, they're like, okay, great, but what about the fucking music? I mean, it's great that they're getting
Who gives a shit?
A lot of people don't really give a damn about the remasters if there's no original
music. Well, I think at this point they just won't that they'll never put another cent into the resource.
Unless there was some other significant thing that needed to happen with 90210. Like there was a groundbreaking decision-making change about music in television.
Well, the thing is that, when we get a bad diagnosis, we just should start collecting names of people who'd want the entire collection. And then at one point we allow that to happen all simultaneously so it can't be stopped.
The thing is, you're selling all this stuff, but it's not really what people bought, right? The idea was that you wanted to see Chris Isaac and even Jamie, give me just Jamie Walters, give me his scenes.
Well, He may be back in it.
Okay, that's good too.
I would think that if you have everything that was on the DVDs, then Jamie was on that. There were things on that. There were things on that.
What? The DVDs, they're still missing Jamie's scenes in the DVDs.
Oh, well.
That's sad. Larry, you have this wonderful book.
Oh, cool.
Hey, yay!
My glasses?
And I think we should spend some time talking about it. So you tell me, now this is...
I'd like to think that... I'm not sure if it's a Guinness World Record, but I think I'm the oldest young adult writer. I think that I'm going for the oldest on that. So I'd like you to help me. But hopefully the first book of the series, The Pool Guy's Kid, for those who read it, really enjoyed it. The same characters now show up in Crushing Cabo. We left the book off. They were going to meet a year later, and that's what happens. And one of them isn't there.
Okay.
And they go out to have to go down to Cabo and down to the Bob Peninsula and to find him. And it becomes a pretty wild adventure where there's illegal organ trafficking, there's ayahuasca, there's fun all over the place, and romance. And it's the kind of thing you want to read. It's really good. I want to say something about the characters. I was thinking, Chuck, Jerry Abrams, of course. producer who's the father of J.J. Abrams, actually. But when I first came to Hollywood in like 1979, I worked with Jerry, and he told me at one point, he says, there's only five characters, and you met them all in high school. And I always thought that was really clever. And my book has the five characters. And so I just wonder, so there's Aura, who's the rebel. You have Letitia, who's the debate club president, overachiever. You have Vijay, who's the life hacker. You've got Fern, the entitled beauty from Beverly Hills. And you've got Gilly, the working class hero. And so those characters all show up. They're a great group of friends. They take out basically the Mexican cartel in this book. And it's really, it's a great adventure with lots of stuff in it. And, do you want me to
will you read, please?
Well, yeah. Actually, but before I am, because as Chuck knows, as writers, we tend to pack our stuff with personal stuff. And so there is some nuggets of 90210 here, because there's one character they meet who helps them tremendously in Tono Sanchez, Mexico, called Antonio. And Antonio, and this is something I got from America's, it was from Planet 90210. Antonio speaks perfect English because he grew up watching Friends and 90210. And when he meets Letitia, the debate club president, overachiever, he says, oh, you're an Andrea. and then later on, when they get involved with a punk mariachi band, they need a ride, they get in their tour bus, the lead singer he describes as the half-sister of Kelly Taylor, who was played by the beautiful Ruth Livier. And I packed some stuff in there here and there. I'm gonna read something now. It starts off, they have to, find their friend in Baja.
Real quick, Larry, Lisa, our friend, says, I love when Larry writes the romance, he gets spicy.
Yes, I certainly this is young adult for very advanced young adults. Young adult in everyone. But okay, I'm just gonna read this here. Fern and I walked Marlene into the fabulous three-bedroom suite of the Palmia. Fern was more gracious than I'd ever seen her. Take a shower. If you need some clothes, you're welcome to my closet. Thank you, Fern. Marlena hugged her and then hugged me while Fern looked on. Thank you, Gilly. The enchantress, goddess, queen dug her fingernails deep into my back again, which I hope Fern didn't notice. Marlene excused herself and hit the head. I could understand how Vijay got suckered in by her. She was the real deal, an ideal, though with questionable judgment. I was glad she'd blown off Bo, who seemed unworthy. These thoughts were swirling as I quickly changed into my Echo in Venice board shorts and UC Riverside t-shirt. Then we were off to the lobby. Once we were out of the room, Fern was not so gracious. You were with her all night? Did you miss the part where we were clinging to a sliver of boat for hours? Find her more irresistible or less now that you've bonded? Fern, we're trying to save Vijay. This is serious. Yes, and then why aren't you kissing me and telling me you love me? There was an open maid supply closet next to the elevator. I pulled Fern inside. What are you doing? Letitia and Aura are... She didn't get to finish. In the dark of the soapy-smelling closet, I kissed her with all the longing I built up at sea. Fern met the intensity with longing of her own, a kiss to remove all the jealousy from her. When we stepped out, my legs felt as wobbly as they had when I stepped off the boat. Fern was the real thing, too. She squeezed my hand and said it first. I love you, Gilly Montrose. I love you, Fern. Well, that wasn't so hard.
All right.
Okay, so that's kind of, within that, and then there's, other...
That's the spicy Lisa's talking about.
There is some spicy stuff, but there's also mad adventure in here. And,
So I read the book. The book's terrific. But I pointed out some different things, so I'm going to read the first few opening paragraphs.
It must be on the Beverly Hills stuff.
I'm not even going to bring that up, Larry. I didn't put that in. I wouldn't do it. But this is what the first manuscript by Larry Mullen and I read was a spec script called Borderline Normal.
Which inevitably did get it made. You made that movie.
Yeah, right? Got made about 10 years later.
That's what my first paragraph's all about, Pete, but it's okay.
I'm sorry.
Drama about a divorced couple with two athletic teenage boys who live on both sides of the Canadian-U.S. border, a script that was eventually produced as a feature film in 2000, starring Corbin Burnson and Stephanie Zimbalist. Had the agent not submitted a draft, not only would I have never realized that Larry's sense of humor, sense of family dynamic, and his hipster sensibility made him a perfect fit for Beverly Hills 90210, the TV show I was running at the time, but I would have missed out on making a lifelong friendship that began 32 effing years ago. Reading Larry's second YA novel, Crushing Cabo, I'm reminded that before he became an MVP in the zip code, Larry spent years writing action-oriented television, often featuring biker gangs on Chips or concocting intricate mobbed-up crime stories for Stephen Cannell. Crushing Cabo's narrative reach includes a behind-the-scenes look at the ruthless turf wars between factions of the Mexican cartels all along Baja California, from the touristy comforts of Cabo San Lucas to a surfer's paradise in Todos Dos Santos, where a black market for organ transplant thrives, cruising up the coast under the cover of darkness in a stolen yacht to a marina in the middle of nowhere where lots of action, lots of hipster music, and a number of corpses can be found. The chase to kill Larry's ragtag group of young protagonists finally culminates at the border in Tijuana, where El Jefe de Jefe calls the shots and inflicts retribution. All right, that's my teaser.
Great.
It's great.
I guess I get the, you know, they, I don't want to give the end away, but yeah, we end
up. No, don't.
I set it up to that point pretty well.
We get up the whole Baja Peninsula.
So you get the spice, but you get the action too, and you get a lot of humor and a lot of good character stuff. So yeah, read it.
It's a couple funny. Thaddy says, congrats on your book, Larry Mullen.
Oh, thank you, Thaddy. You're so good.
Thaddy is so sweet. She always sends us these incredible messages and on Instagram and social media about something that happened 2 years ago on the podcast or something. And I always love reading them and whatnot. She's a sweetheart. Tammy says, we may be the oldest young adult readers.
Yes, I have very old young adult readers. That's true. It's true. it really is true. But we're just going to go with it. And I need to sell some books here to get the third one published, too. So I really need everyone out there, the thousands and thousands of people who buy this podcast or watch this podcast.
I'm serious. You know,
get the book. Show some love.
I mean, that's the key. Like, we got to get everybody out there and talking about your book and sharing
it. Let's talk about it. Have some fun with it. It's a good summer read, and plus you'll look cool sitting in a plane or at the beach reading it.
I think we could do 7 episodes of this podcast, season by season, look at the music. Should we do something? Maybe we should do that? Is that something we should think about doing, maybe? Remember we did those 7...
You can't play the music. It's one thing for me to read a short list. You can't play it. It's not the same.
It's true. It is true. But we could talk about the music and go through... this episode and remember that. And we got 7 episodes out of Diane Young. I feel like maybe if we really wanted to put some effort in this, and maybe in the fall, we can.
You'd be surprised, Chuck. The fans eat this stuff up. They love it.
They pick a song, we pick a song. They pick a song, we pick a song. Something like each season by season. That's an idea. What do you guys think? Oh, look at this. People are saying yes.
Well, I dropped mine. I played my hand already here. So, you know, you look at mine. There they are. But I'll do different or find different ones or use these. I figured it was great. I didn't do Losing My Religion. I didn't do Chris Isaak. I went for different ones, you know, the little more obscure. Like the one you put in your list, Brian. I go, oh, that one. Of course, I've never heard of this, but I know it's good.
All right. This has been really great. It's good to see everybody, and I'm glad everybody's doing well where they are. We'll all see each other again soon.
I like that.
Yeah. It's been a very good episode. And remember, you can stream 90210 on Pluto. I don't know why I shared that, but that helps everybody out, I think, right?
If there's one that you really want the original music, get in touch with us. And those guys will give you my email or how to get to the. I'll give me your email so that I can send you the Rosen Report if you're interested, which I hope you might be.
Okay, Kyle asked a question that this will take all day for you guys to answer. But who of the recurring characters should have had a bigger role? Do you guys want to answer it or you want to skip it?
Recurring characters?
Who of the recurring characters should have had a bigger role?
Months. because we like him.
Yeah. By the way, Muntz is on TikTok. He's like live in the Love Shack.
That's really cool.
Records, and he's made a whole life now as a TikTok influencer. He's great.
Yeah, love DJ stuff.
And I guess, Brian, do you like send him money and stuff? You send him like these little tokens and stuff. What is that stuff?
I wouldn't know. I don't have a TikTok, so I have no idea.
Chuck, there's something there on the bottom of the screen, which like you sent him like gifts and stuff. I don't quite understand.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Well,
yeah.
Man, he's not a chef anymore. He's got to eat.
Right. I think he's making a living from this. Gretchen is really good for him. Really, he was so.
Why can't we do this like where people send us gifts when we do the podcast?
Just read my book and read Chuck's Rosen Report.
Exactly.
There's 10,000 people on this podcast. We need to meet everyone.
Lauren Meltzer suggested Deshaun. She said Deshaun.
That's a good.
I would have done a lot more with Deshaun if we could have afforded it. Would we have kept Josh Richland longer and not murdered him so early?
that's a good point too.
I enjoyed him. Oh, I also liked the teacher, Kylie.
Gil Myers.
Gil Myers. Yeah,
that was a tough one. Yeah,
I liked him a lot. I liked writing for him. I liked writing for Mark Damon Espinosa, actually, when all of a sudden.
And what about Zach Throne, our buddy who played Howard? We should say Zach Throne has become a rock and roll star. He has like been touring the world for like 2 years now with
it's legitimate.
He's very big he was Alice in Chains, which I don't really know, but they really are big. And Zach is playing lead guitar. I watch it on YouTube. He's like fucking shredding it.
When we first reached out to Zach to do the reunion video as Howard, he said, "How do you know who I am?" he didn't even know what was happening.
And Chuck and I have had some fun with him in Vegas too, and he was kind of on a down period then, but now he's like so busy, he's like touring the world for twice.
What about Chuck? What about Sue Scanlon?
Oh, you mean in terms of the show? Would we have brought her back?
Yeah,
my temptation is because I'm not PC because she had this experience, it would mess her up, and that's not a right. That's not a good message. So for me, no win.
You have to deal with it. It's like having Finley back.
Oh, I would have liked. I would have liked Carla. I would have liked the gal from East Side Story. I thought they were hot.
Even Nikki Witt. Even Dana Barron.
Oh, Nikki Dana. Dana would be. We could have done a lot more. She was fun and had great ideas. Her character was terrific. Her character. We just ran out of juice for that. No money. So that was a good question. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a very good question. We like things like that. Especially at the end of an episode when we're trying to get out. Wait a minute, but maybe if everyone has questions like that, was a good question. If you have questions like that, why don't we open the mailbox? I don't know if people say that on shows.
Okay. Here's my question. Judge or Tawny? Huh? National League wins. Yeah.
Well, that was
10 straight wins. It's been so nice. It's been such a bad season. Now all of a sudden we're winning.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going to happen this season because even for you, Chuck, with the Dodgers,
we love your management again. They got rid of Devers, right?
It seemed to be the magic elixir.
Yeah, a bad clubhouse.
Since he's gone,
a bad clubhouse is hard to repair.
I'll tell you one thing: watching this guy Chapman pitch is amazing. I've never seen him better. I mean, he's got himself. And he throws strikes, enough of a strike.
Well, if I was going to pick a long shot to win the National League and be in the World Series, long shot, not the logical choice, it would be the Milwaukee Brewers. Their pitchers are incredible. And they've got that young guy who was in the All-Stars.
He's good.
He destroyed us. And then coming to Dodgers Stadium for 3 games, I hope we win one of them. If we win two, we're on our way.
The thing about us, our teams, Chuck, the Dodgers and the Mets, is that you've had this losing streak. We had a wild losing streak, too. So this is a season where I have no idea what's going to happen. Like, it feels like we're still involved, but it could fall apart any minute. for us anyway.
Well, I don't know. Alonso's hitting again for you, right?
Yeah. And Soto is too, which is really great.
Well, he's a terrific player.
And Lindor. You know, we do have some. Yeah, we do have some.
You got stars.
Yes. We just need something, some stuff to happen. Not that this is a baseball podcast, but we do need some stuff to happen at the deadline, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, this has been good to see everybody. Part podcast, part catching up, and we'll be back soon
at with some more.
Point. Yeah.
Talk to you soon,
everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.